Alrighty folks, and welcome to the Chronicle Podcast channel. This is episode 45, Tan Tai Zong, part 1. So the way I'm going to structure this episode is, well actually, I'm going to structure Tan Tai Zong's life into two phases. The first is going to be what he does internally, so how he corrects the Tang court and how he manages to basically get everything moving, to which really makes China the middle kingdom of the day, which is when Tang Tai Zong comes to power. And then the episode in 2 weeks' time is going to be all about what he did externally. So the conquests and things that he embarks upon and how he manages to get, you know, China basically to become this massive empire that really dominates everything on the global scale. So first, like I said, we're going to look at what Tang Taizong does internally. Now, Tang Gaozu, Li Shi means father, Tang Taizong's father, like we've discovered, was a good person and a good man overall. He was okay. He didn't really want to rebel, but he kind of had to. And from a source that I read, which I just have to mention, by the way, because if it's true, it's brilliant. And it's like it just shows like the characters of these people and really brings the historical figures to life. Li Shuming conspires against his father in a way like that makes him have no choice but to rebel against the Sui dynasty. And the way that he does this is basically, whilst Sui Yangdi is in southern China, Li Shuming told his father to have a few wines with him and an old friend. The wine flows, everyone gets kind of drunk, and before you know it, Li Yuan has woken up in his bed with two lovely looking ladies. However, they are too good looking. So good looking that Li Yuan asked where he got them from, and it just so happened they were concubines of that emperor he was trying to actively not rebel against. Of course, he cries, running to his son, because like son, like father in this case, he has the answer. And Li Shimin basically tells him, well, now you have to rebel, otherwise you'll get executed. But regardless, this does set the Li family on its course to taking power in China. When Li Shimin became emperor, he did have a lot of house cleaning to do, though. And, I mean, what's he supposed to do? He just killed his brothers in the, like, to get to power in the first place, and he has their advisors all around him. So, of course, he has to get rid of them or try and, you know, work a deal out with them. And what he does is that he interviews them all personally, and then, of course, he issues out the judgments. This may be Tang propaganda, but it does seem that Li Shimin did release the majority of them, and even invited them to work for him in his court. One such example that I found from the Kings and Generals YouTube channel was an advisor from the former Crown Prince Wei Zheng, who advised Li Jiangcheng, Li Shimin's elder brother, to kill the now emperor. When Tang Taizong had a meeting with the man, he said, "I heard you advised my brother to kill me." And in reply, Wei Zheng said, "If the Crown Prince adopted my advice, he would not have met his end like this." Now, normally, I'm pretty sure that's just asking to get a knife in the back. Like, that's asking to get killed. But Tang Taizong showed leniency towards this advisor and was impressed with his honesty. So he offered him a nice little job in the new administration of the court. This leniency demonstrated by Tang Taizong was actually something that he is really famous for. And that's what makes him one of the greatest emperors that China has ever produced. So as he's cleaning up house, there was, you know, like the good times are really beginning to roll in now. And Taizong is really one of the top emperors in Chinese history. He's certainly up there with the likes of Han Wudi and Qianlong, who comes later on. But why? What makes this guy stand out? Well, one thing that really comes to mind is that when he becomes emperor, it's the legal reforms that he introduces. For example, the death penalty was handed out quite liberally, and the emperor felt that this was wrong. And the death penalty should have only come as a punishment for the most serious of crimes. And it wasn't just the death penalty, it was the other penalties that came along with it, you know, like cutting off people's noses, cutting their feet off, their hands off, like all of these horrible, gruesome punishments that were handed out. Like Tang Taizong tried to avoid that and try to be more lenient with people in this way. So yeah, like I said, Tan Tai Zong, he got so obsessed with this idea where, you know, you have to, like, you can't just kill people, like, for no reason, like, especially, like, when people are trying to be corrupt in court and things. So what happened was any death penalties that were issued, they had to be approved by the emperor himself. So he took a really deep interest in trying to make sure that the people were governed properly. And, you know, if Tan Tai Zong was inspecting death penalty requests and things, what about his ministers? And again, this is really interesting because this man, I could only imagine, knows that he is extremely talented. I mean, look where he's took himself. In his early career, he's managed to convince his father to rebel against a powerful dynasty, took over that dynasty, and then he's managed to subjugate the people around him as well, making him, like, the top dog in all of China now. And, like, normally that breeds arrogance, right? Let's be honest. It just, like, you become arrogant if you've made all of these incredible accomplishments. But Tang Taizong knew that a king or an emperor is only as good as the court that he employs. And that's something that he recognized. Now, I reckon when Li Shimin was reading the classics and the rise and fall of the previous dynasties, he recognized that with time, every dynasty became rotten within and corrupt to the very core. And it's because powerful families use their wealth and their influence to ensure that they stay on top, right? And it's completely natural to do that. I mean, if you're on the top, you want to make sure you stay there, especially you and your descendants. And this inheritance of wealth and government positions that really ruined dynasties sometimes. It ruined the Zhou dynasty, the well of Chinese culture that Li Shimin was a part of. And now think of it, if Zhou kings fell from grace, it's partially due to incompetence, yes, but the feudal system of government that they had brought together broke down with generations after it reached its height. And why is that? It's because people got jobs based on what their ancestors did. So it'd be like, oh, this guy's great-grandfather defeated a bunch of barbarians on the frontiers and incorporated this area into the empire. And that's why he's got this job in the court. Well, yeah, that guy did it, but what about this guy? He's done nothing. All he's done is eat from a silver spoon and act like he's an emperor, even though he's not. And it then just bred into the spring and autumn period where it's just all division. Villagers are rising up and declaring emperors, and all these horrible things that happen are at this time. Now, don't get me wrong, the spring and autumn period is a very interesting period to look at because it's got all this culture in it, it's got all these philosophies in it, and again, like, the philosophies that people are interested in China, they all came from this time, and it's because the philosophers are trying to find a way to stop this madness that's going on in China. And Li Shimin's looking at this, and he sees the Zhou dynasty falling from grace. He then looks at the Han dynasty, which is like the pinnacle before the Tang dynasty, so to speak. And the same thing happened. Powerful families usurped power within the imperial court, within the Han court. And now he's looking at the court that he's inherited. Well, no, he didn't inherit it. He killed his way to get there, but he killed his two brothers. But he's looking at the court that his father's left behind for him, and he's seeing the same thing happening. Now, don't get me wrong, Tang Gaozu, Li Shimin's father, he didn't do this on purpose. Like, he gave up a lot of government positions to wealthy families just because when he rebelled against the Sui dynasty, he needed support from these powerful families. And the way to guarantee such support is to say, well, if you give me money and soldiers, then I'll give you a position in the new administration. And that was basically the way it worked. However, when Li Shimin comes to power, he has no intention of keeping these people. But he does not want these people in his court. He knows they're corrupt. He knows they're not the best people for the job. And he even wrote, quote, "Disorder has always been the result of employing men of inferior worth. Good government has always come about by employing loyal and worthy men. If one employs the loyal and worthy, then one's empire will enjoy good fortune. If one employs men of inferior worth, then one's empire will suffer calamity." And now, the thing is, like, when you're looking at, you know, that quote from Li Shimin and, like, what he's trying to do, it does sound a lot like another Chinese emperor, like Liu Bang, the founder of the Han Dynasty, he did something similar. Like, he was very much a man who knew how to use people. Because we need to remember, Liu Bang wasn't exactly, he wasn't born from nobility, he didn't know any of the classics or anything. The guy couldn't even read. And yet he managed to work his way up to the top and become emperor. And Li Ximin, I think, probably seen that and is like, okay, well, you know, we can take this guy's example. And, I mean, it's clear that he believed that good governments came from talent and not familial ties. Now, it's easy just to write and say these things, but it may be difficult to actually act this way. However, Tang Taizong has a great reputation for following the advice of his officials and being a practical and pragmatic man. Like I said previously, it did mean that he had some court cleaning to do, but he did so, you know, quite effectively. And if you weren't fit for the job, you got booted and you got replaced. And to get these ministers and to pin them down for crimes of corruption, Tang Taizong actually organised a sting operation. Sting operation is basically when you try to catch someone out doing something wrong by doing something wrong yourself. Anyway, commenting on this is the historians Ouyang Xiu and Song Qi. They said, quote, "After Taizong ascended to the throne, he was disgusted by corrupt officials in government and wanted to severely punish them. Therefore, he set up a sting operation. He secretly dispatched agents to offer and deliver gifts to various officials. One lower official accepted such a gift of silk. Taizong became enraged and ordered that this official be executed. Pei Ju remonstrated, saying..." By the way, Pei Ju is like one of the officials in the court. "Pei Ju remonstrated, saying, 'Officials who accept bribes should indeed be put to death. However, your majesty has used a sting operation to deceive this official. This is using the law to entrap someone and is deceiving someone to commit a crime. This is not the way of using virtue and righteousness to lead the people.'" Taizong was pleased with Pei Ju's criticism and he was willing to debate in court and set forth his own views. He does not simply say what he thinks I want to hear. If every matter was handled in this manner, there is no way that our state would be not governed well. End quote. Now, it's just amazing to think, right, that Pei Ju, this minister, had the gall to criticize the emperor in front of the entire court and not only change the emperor's mind, but to actually get praise from the emperor himself for doing so. It's these things that we see which really bring the character that is Tang Taizong to life, right? It's incredible to think that this man, who had absolute power, was not absolutely corrupted by it, and instead set about putting China into the world stage and truly made it the middle kingdom of the day. I mean, look at Europe at this time. It was a mess. The Roman Empire was long gone, only remains of it still stood, so you could imagine the peasantry, they're looking at that old Colosseum and thinking, who built this? Because it's just way too advanced for the Europeans now. And, you know, the Muslims, they're encroaching into Christian lands and into Spain. The European barbarian kingdoms that destroyed the Romans were all fighting against each other. And then you take your gaze away from Europe and you look into China, where a truly enlightened emperor was in power and governed the empire that he created. And I mean, let's be honest, his father may have been the first emperor, but really it was Tang Taizong who was the one who orchestrated the whole thing. He was really the man for the job, and he proved it with his actions. And what's even more interesting is that Tang Taizong did genuinely seem to believe that diversity in opinion was a good thing. Now before, like, you know, Chinese emperors and Chinese lords and bureaucrats, they're all pretty conservative minded. But Tang Taizong was actually really open to new ideas, and he was open to new arguments. And he believed that this was a good thing, and he would listen to all arguments presented to him and act accordingly. In another writing, the emperor said, quote, "Now the king occupies the highest place and oversees his government from the depths of his seclusion in the palace. This impairs his clearly hearing about events and stops him from clearly seeing what is happening. He is afraid that if there are faults committed, he will not hear of them, and frightened that if there are deficiencies in government, nobody will repair them. He should give careful thought both to the policies that are accepted and to those that are declined, and will listen to proposals carefully with an open mind, that is, with no preconceptions. This is the way in which he should stand and await loyal and just counsel. Whatever is said that is right, even though it comes from servants or slaves, grass cutters or firewood gatherers, still may not be rejected. Counsel that is worthy of attention should be looked at without criticising its authors over the precise details. Policies that are fit for use should be adopted without demanding eloquence of style from their authors. End quote. Now that's interesting, right? I mean, think about it. This is a guy who grew up in a royal, powerful family, and even his own family members would look down at disgust at slaves or, you know, like the peasantry, the farmers, the merchants. They would hate them. And yet here's this emperor who's grew up in that environment, and he's saying, no, we need to hear what the people think, we need to help the people, we need to hear their views, and in that way we can make a better world. I mean, that's just amazing when you think of it. And it's just incredible to think that a guy did this over 1,000 years ago, and nobody's been able to quite replicate that caring attitude for the community, if you will. Now, don't get me wrong, like, Li Shimin's doing this not purely out of the kindness of his heart. I mean, I think part of it's that, but it's practical as well. I mean, he overthrew a dynasty that was completely shattered by revolts all the time. There was rebellions all the time, and he was one of them. He rebelled as well. So when he's doing this, he's actually trying to secure his position in power. So that, oh, the Sui is the really bad people, but here we are, the good guys. And, like, it worked. I mean, it's a good policy when everyone likes you. So, you know, there is that. Like, you need to look at it in that sense as well. Like, there are hidden elements to his way, so to speak. But at the same time, you know, you can't argue with that. He tried to help people. Maybe, like, for whatever reason, he helped people. That's just the way it is. What's interesting as well, though, is that the diversity of opinions, like I spoke about, didn't just come from his subject peoples. Tang Taizong was very open to people within his own territory, but people from out with it as well. Now, if you're Chinese, you would be thinking, yeah, that's impressive, because China's always been in this little cultural bubble that doesn't really get much influence from the outside. And, you know, China always looks inwards, and very rarely would outside ideas actually penetrate China. But this is one of the times where it does penetrate China, and it's welcomed with open arms because of the emperor who's running it. So the Silk Road, that is so famous, that massive trade route where goods and ideas flow from east to west and west to east, that's back open. After Tang Taizong's conquests of the north and the ideas that are coming and going, they're all welcomed with open arms. And, you know, people from all corners of the earth were allowed to visit Tang China and were treated exceptionally well. Europeans who brought their Christian beliefs with them were allowed to trade freely in China. Muslims from the various caliphates that sprung up were also allowed to enter and trade freely. Alongside these people, Japanese scholars and traders also made their way back to China to see the Tang court in action. Many of these Chinese customs were then brought back into Japan, and the impact is still felt today. For example, it was the first time Japanese people came into contact with Buddhism and Buddhist ideas, and from there, Japanese Shintoism was blended with Buddhist ideas to create Zen Buddhism over time. It's amazing to think of that, right? This tolerant ruler never ascended the dragon throne in China. The world we know today would be totally different. Not only in religious aspects, but in even like writing. Because the Japanese, when they came over to Tang China, they seen the Chinese characters and, you know, they were like, oh, can we take some of these and take them back to Japan with us? And the Tang were like, yeah, of course, we're brothers, blah, 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 everyone's happy. And it's still seen today. So, I mean, when you look at it that way, it just shows that how much of an enlightened thinker that Tang Taizong really was. Now, the final point I will make in regards to Tang Taizong, like in terms of his internal policies, is his general opinion about man and heaven. Now, if you've listened to my previous podcast, you will know that, you know, the Mandate of Heaven is a huge deal in China. And, of course, it's still a huge deal for Tang Taizong. But he knows that. But what's interesting and fascinating is that even though the Chinese, like every other culture of the time, they're extremely superstitious. And, you know, some of those superstitions are still apparent today. But Li Shimin was much more practical than looking for an auspicious sign to affect his policies. Instead, Tang Taizong basically acknowledged heaven's will and the whole concept of the Mandate of Heaven, but again, it was only to prove his legitimacy, really. But he also empowered himself with this mandate. Now, evidence of it can be found when an official once told him that an omen that he's seen, and that it was a sign of bad things to come, and the emperor responded by saying, "These events were nevertheless also influenced by the doings of men." And then he went on to talk about the story of the founder of the Shang Dynasty, when in his early reign they were suffering from a 7-year drought, and he used his own upright actions, and he was rewarded with a reign that came afterwards. And, you know, Tang Taizong uses this example because he doesn't say that, oh, well, the emperor, well, Tang Shang, like the founder of the Tang dynasty, he just accepted heaven's will and just said, oh, we're all going to die from the drought. Instead, he took proper actions by making sacrifices to heaven and like having that relationship with, you know, heaven, the sky, or the gods, whatever you want to call it. And then he was rewarded. So it's like a test in faith. And you can't help but draw parallels to the West in that sense. I mean, how many stories are in the Bible that talk about testing of faith? There's always a test of faith somewhere. Like, God is testing you, testing to see if you can actually, like, get through those temptations and make sure that you live the true way of God and, like, worship God properly and all these things. And this is what Tang Taizong's alluding to here. Now, this is what, like, gauges my interest in Chinese history. Because in a lot of ways, it's totally alien to other cultures. I mean, like, take the West, for example. Yet, parallels can also be drawn too, which is just awesome. But from what Tang Taizong is saying here, you can see the way in which he says, yes, heaven is important, but our actions are more important. And if one acts correctly, i.e. the emperor, and justly, then heaven would approve anyway. So it doesn't matter if you're looking for an auspicious sign or something along those lines. If you act accordingly, heaven will reward you. And, you know, he kind of proved that when he'd done all these great things and brought China up to the highest of the high it's ever been in its history. Now then, due to the fact that I've only scratched the surface, really, of Tang Taizong's domestic policies, and I've already taken a pretty long time to do that, I'm going to wrap it up here. And in 2 weeks' time, we will look at the successes of Tang Taizong's reign when it comes to his conquests, which I've all saved up for next week. Sorry, not next week, in 2 weeks. So, I look forward to that when it comes out, and before I go, I'm going to leave a question for you. Tang Taizong was definitely one of the crown jewels when it comes to Chinese emperors. Where does he stand in your rankings? See you next time.